I'm Rudy Roe Dollar Flow Bigliani, along with my partner Telly TJ Vangeli. This is Cross Vegas. After years of sowing seeds of faith as up-and-coming televangelists, TJ and I crashed into our new endeavor of being social mediators for the kingdom right here in Las Vegas. We're demonstrating the blessing that he wants for you in our latest project of prosperity at Cross Vegas. Come join us as we bring the redemption of riches to the Sin City. Remember, what happens here stays in heaven.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
If you're a tech-savvy gentleman over the age of 50, looking for a way to regrow your hair, shrink your beer belly, and regain your romantic confidence, Erexosaurus RX may be the answer you've been searching for. Erexosaurus RX is a brand new treatment developed by Science Guys, operating at the cutting edge of AI and DIY health research, just like you. ERX treatment addresses all your key health concerns by combining insights delivered through hundreds of groundbreaking new chatbot-generated scientific theories of testosterone creation and depletion. Don't wait another day. Take hold of your wellness destiny with all 12 fingers. Launch your health to the moon, our nearest star. Believe us, she'll thank you. Nothing in this advertisement for ERX is to be construed as an encouragement to consider taking ERX. If you talk to your doctor about using ERX, they will not give you a prescription for it, but rather a stern lecture. Contact a real doctor immediately if for any reason you start to take ERX, as it is not a medicine and has active ingredients known to cause cancer. If your doctor fails to give you the aforementioned lecture, please call your state's medical licensing board, as this error of omission may constitute malpractice or criminal negligence, punishable in 43 states and the District of Columbia. If the medical board won't listen to you, immediately call your local poison control hotline. People's lives are in danger. Erexosaurus RX, a fresh way to stay fresh when you don't feel fresh enough to start getting fresh.
Well, ho, 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 dear listeners, wherever you may be across these frosted and fruitcake plains, thanks for making us part of your holy day. And notice that I did not say happy holidays, because TJ, you know, I'm Merry Christmaser through and through. So a sincere Merry Christmas to you, my dear partner in ministry, or should I say Chris Ministry. You like that, TJ?
I do like that, Rudy, but something I don't like is how you got a touch of the mononucleosis from a little bit of snuggling and tuggling there, or perhaps you've just been over-practicing your booing for opening day of the Las Vegas Oakland Athletics of Sacramento, which we will be watching on a hacked YouTube premium login we're renting from a fella in Madagascar. I do hope you feel better soon, sir. Maybe you've been at one of these Chris Vid events where everybody's got COVID and everyone says they don't have COVID, and then they come and they all already did have COVID, so nobody gets COVID. But then they all go home and they think they got it from each other and they blame each other and never speak again.
Well, that's a possibility, because you know I've been decking the halls, and I'm going to keep on decking the halls until me and you are cheering on them baseballs with the Athletics. So I hear you there, good buddy.
Well, it is Christmas time. I mean, you hear our jingle bells in the background, you hear our sleigh bells in the foreground, and we could not be celebrating a happier, merrier Christmas than the one we are right now, because guess what? Trump is back. That means for American Christians, the main thing we are experiencing is that Christmas is back. We are able to say Merry Christmas again for the first time in a long time. Rudy, I'm telling you, I haven't felt safe saying Merry Christmas in 10, 11, maybe even 12 months. And I just love that we are back in this season of winning. And I just like to give full credit to this election victory. The 45th through 47th presidency, you know, I don't know which one to call it really. MJ wore number 45 when he returned. So it's kind of like that's code for returning. So you want to reference that. But 47 and 45 are both kind of auspicious numbers. They're both prime numbers. So I just like whichever one we go with here.
Yeah, we can just call it. I mean, he was there in spirit. And so we can just say 45, 46, and 47 in spirit.
Maybe we could do one of those math things where the number goes on like forever with the decimal, like 45th.44 repeating presidency.
I like that.
Like it's forever with the 45s, you know?
I really like that.
I think I overheard someone calling the president an asymptote recently, which would be fitting because that's the thing in math where you think the number is going to bottom out completely, but then you learn it will never actually get to being completely worthless, just a little bit less, a little bit worse all the time.
So I guess we can just agree that he's the infinity president.
Well, whichever one you are, Mr. President, we are so grateful that you have brought Christmas back to us. It is the main change that we will experience this year, I expect. There's a lot of talk about other policies that might go into effect, but the thing that's this presidency is going to be known for these whole 4 years is the return of Christmas.
That's right. That's right. And I think, you know, the only way to prove our allegiance to our commander in chief is to really wage this holy war on Christmas. And, you know, we knew we needed to show the public what this message was all about. Like, we really needed to make a statement. We just want to draw the people in and put people on the Santa side of this holy day war, you know. This really the only option is to execute the greatest two-man Christmas pageant ever imagined.
And what better way to make a statement about the most meaningful, anticipatory kind of event than just to put on like a two-man show on a blank stage with just one Christmas tree up there, shabby clothes, wearing bowler hats, just waiting around indefinitely.
So obviously when our creative gears get to grinding, we can come up with some pretty amazing ideas. One pageant idea we didn't pursue, which was a bit of a passion project I've been typing out for years now, is a little project called Ernest Saves Christmas and So Does Jesus. Unfortunately, it didn't quite pack the same sort of a contextual punch that we were looking for, so we're going to save that for another day.
One that never quite made it under the spotlight or above the footlights, whichever one is the right way to talk about plays. You know, Miracle on 34th Street is so classic, but we wanted to do one that had to do with Las Vegas, but we just couldn't settle on a title, and my first draft of that one, Miracle on Zircon Circle in Mesquite Avenue, in the crenellated shadow of the 613 Summerlin Parkway extension of 95 and Interstate 11, didn't quite have the same ring to it there.
You know, with those two on the cutting room floor, in the end, we decided that the best message we could communicate, the best pageant we could write and perform as a two-person play would be straight from the Holy Word. And this is why we created one of our greatest works entitled A Very Old Testament Christmas. And we wanted to take people on a journey through the oldest testament in the Bible in an attempt to find the traces of Christmas that are woven through this meta-narrative.
That's right. And you'd think for a couple of biblical scholars like us, we'd have come across this already. But the Old Testament is replete with references to the father of Christmas, Santa Claus. And we want to send people back through that full story where they can see every reference to that great man, that sainted figure of our childhoods, that all anticipates, right? That all leads us up towards the greatest of Christian events, which is Christmas morning.
I mean, just we're getting back to the real story of Christmas through the Word. And the only way that we're going to rock around that Christmas tree is really just to walk people through the main points of that Old Testament. So, of course, our pageant starts with creation.
And who better to be brooding over the waters of chaos than Santa Claus himself in his sleigh?
And, you know, when you look closely into the scripture, you see that there were 6 days of creation. You think about the most hallowed Christmas carol of all, the 12 days of Christmas. There's a lot of lining up right there. And if you just really exegete the 12 days of Christmas, you'll find that most of it is really creation themed. It's basically a song celebrating trees and animals and dancers, and all of which we find in those first days of creation.
And it's twice as nice, right? We got 6 days of creation, 12 days of Christmas. really getting that jolly spirit going right from the beginning of the biblical story. Like, what a wonderful surprise to find that in our recent studies.
So then as we turn the page in our graphic novel, Old Testament, we come upon the next story in the Bible, that of Noah. We see our character Noah, a foreshadowing of Father Christmas, as he ignores the unbelievers around him and fills a boat full of all the animals in the world. Now remember, the animals at that time were like the Bible times versions of toys, because people didn't have nothing else to play with. And he's using that same power to circumvent the globe. And Noah points to another patriarch who can circumvent the globe supernaturally with the biggest bag of toy animals anyone's ever seen.
You know, some sticks in the mud out there and in different universities and seminaries have been trying to say, well, Noah couldn't possibly do this, couldn't possibly do that. Well, probably 10 times as many people believe Santa's got magic that fits all the toys in his big bag. Like, why can't Noah, through the Jolly Spirit, be using that exact same magic to stuff all the animals in one big boat? I think this is more of a solution than a problem for the early accounts of the Bible.
That's right. They just sort of prove one another through and through. So as the flood waters end up drying out all over the earth, out comes another character, that of Moses, who has his own little encounter with what we call it an ancient times Christmas tree.
It hasn't gotten watered. It's ready to flame up. It's been right out there since February 8th. The thing's still up to stave off the late winter chill with some early winter cheer. That, of course, is the Christmas tree that burns up in the desert. Sometimes called a burning bush, but really that, you know, you ask the Hebrew scholars, bush, Christmas tree, kind of the same word used in Hebrew.
That's right, and that's one of the reasons why today you see people stringing up lights on their tree. And of course, previously, if you look at the real times of Christmas celebration, people would be putting candles on the tree. It's really just in alignment. I think maybe we got to go back to them days, if you ask me. This goes right into an incredible account, and that is of the Israelites looking to flee from Egypt.
You know, what better type, what better biblical foreshadowing of Scrooge and his hard heart than Pharaoh and the hardening of his heart? I mean, you've never seen a more clear biblical to literary comparison and foreshadowing. You got the blood over the doorpost, just like we got mistletoe over the doorpost. And that is still used to stave off judgment, although sometimes it presages that judgment, if depending on who you're kissing under the mistletoe. You're trying to follow the rules and avoid the judgment on the naughty Egyptians, but then you end up kissing whoever, because that's in the rule book for that too. And boy, that can lead to kind of a last second extra chance at judgment if you haven't quite set that up right.
That's right.
And we play that out because that mistletoe is up there and it's only you and me on stage. And we got to make some decisions.
I'm a little hesitant to describe the whole thing in detail because I want people to be able to see it. You know, the only way to really experiences is to see it in the theater with us there. But in the same way that, you know, you ever seen a Peter Pan production, sometimes we use the spotlight as another character. In this case, the ghost of Christmas future comes in just to steal them gifts from them middle children, just as the angel of death did. And that's finally the one thing that convinces that pre-incarnate Scrooge to let God's people go.
I love it, and so will our audience. So we're moving right through that the biblical account. We got out of Egypt, and we're going to exemplify that by kind of throwing a bucket of water on the unholiest-looking Egyptian in the audience to show we're going through the Red Sea there. But then we got to, you know, also see how the Lord has provided for the Israelites and for Santa Claus by leaving out the man overnight, just like we leave out cookies and milk for the big guy.
That's right. And I know that when it came time to put out cookies for Santa, people, they follow these traditions without even knowing why they're doing it, you know. The manna wasn't anything special. Just like most children don't put out the most specialist cookies for Santa, just maybe a couple of them dusty ones. But the thing about it is, it's there every time. It's there every time, just like the manna was there in the wilderness. So there's just an incredible parallel that I think a lot of people gloss over, but we highlighted in that next scene of the play.
And just like the manna, you can't hoard that up for later. There's no keeping the cookies and milk for a second day. Either Santa eats them or you pitch them because you forgot to have Santa eat them. Or because Santa forgot to eat them, or because mom or dad didn't eat them when they woke up and one or the other had put them out. Maybe there was two plates out because they both did it. They didn't coordinate on the calendar about who's taking care of Santa Claus. Anyway, if you leave cookies and milk out on Christmas night, it is like the worms getting into the manna in those jars that they try to preserve. Well, something that happens a little later in the Bible that we just think could not be closer to the spirit of the story of Christmas is when Elijah goes up in his chariot of fire, which is a prefiguration of the sleigh of Santa Claus. And that chariot of fire, I mean, is very understandable for anybody who's ever run out of coolant on a hot day running down aisle 11. You got to open all the windows. You got to put the heat on just to kind of like try to air cool your engine before you get a chance to clean out your radiator and figure that out. So I think that's just like the hot climate sleigh outside of its usual snowy context.
Totally. I mean, I think if you're in the audience and you maybe nodded off just a bit for the first couple of scenes because maybe you had a little bit too much eggnog, this is the time when you're going to kind of want to get roused again, because this is the number one, maybe most clear-cut precursor to Santa. And one thing I really like about the end of this scene is we see that moment when Elijah Santa hands off the mantle or the Santa outfit or the Santa suit to the Elijah Santa, which is a common theme that you see throughout a lot of Christmas movies. And we'll be talking about some of them Christmas movies later in the show here, but that's just such a great moment right there. Now, as we continue on, we're in the act of the prophets. So we've gone through Elijah Santa, Elisha Santa, and now we come upon the Isaiah Santa. We find maybe the most clear foretelling of Christmas in the book of Isaiah. We all know that as we see the young messenger is transported to the North Pole in Santa's sanctuary in the presence of the pre-incarnate Santa. And Isaiah realizes that he's on the naughty list, and a lump of coal is touched to his lips to bring him safely to the nice list.
Man, well, I was just thinking about unclean lips. That's a great description of my childhood self on Christmas morning when I'm devouring chocolate oranges and Andes mints and finding candy cane bits fused with saliva to my hair later in the day. But this is a powerful scene.
And this leads us to maybe another one of them more poignant prophetical Santa passages, and that being of the suffering servant.
You know, Santa and his elves are the servants of all humanity, specifically the elves, because they got to meet their insane toy production quotas. They're the Uyghurs of the North Pole, if you will. And something that this passage just teaches us so well is that servants should expect to suffer. That's why I kidnapped you, and that's why Santa has you working so hard for, you know, room and board practically. But that's going to be a powerful image of just what does Santa Claus mean for the modern social relations that we have. What does he mean for bosses and workers? What does he mean for pastors and congregants?
That's right. So good. It's just so rich in all that detail. So in our meta-narrative sleigh ride, we continue on to the exile in Babylon, where we find the three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who are asked to bow down to an image, only to find themselves in a fire furnace.
What a picture of a culture war victory. They were given this visitation from on high, not bowing the knee to the happy holidays of their time, specifically the joy of the holiday of celebrating the statue of Nebuchadnezzar that had been set up.
That's right, and as they end up finding themselves in this fire furnace, it's an opportunity to see the pre-incarnate Santa able to withstand the fireplaces of millions of fires to bring peace and presence to the young children. It's an incredible testimony. It's an incredible reminder of the power of the spirit of Santa.
Of all God's creatures, Santa is the one most equipped to survive those extreme conditions.
So this leads us to our final act, in which we get to explore some of the poetic literature in the Old Testament.
Yeah, we're going to see if we can tiptoe our way around the unfortunately titled Psalm 69. This is the one reference to the Book of Life in the Old Testament, and which is a prefiguration of the naughty list. Interesting part, you know, stop the show here, just bring up your Holy Bible app, switch it to KJV, and you will see that it looks like from this psalm, you can pray people straight onto that naughty list if you're mad at them. It's one of those real clear, like, I'm good, they're bad, God, why haven't you punished them yet kind of psalms that I like so much.
That's right. Kind of points that ultimate leverage that a parent has over their children, just putting them there on that naughty list.
Which is kind of an unlooked-for role of Santa Claus, because, you know, as I've been Googling around on Bing for this answer, I saw that Santa is Latin or French or something for holy. And so when you translate that, you get Holy Claus, which tells us that Santa Claus is an instrument of the Lord's wrath and judgment. He is sharpening his claws all year, ready to dish out, you know, some judgment on the naughties when he comes around on. And this whole research project on dictionary.com that I did really just highlighted for me how important it is to get your facts, and especially the facts about the names, straight, else everything goes sideways. So just to take a page out of the Evangelical Pastor's Handbook right now, I'm going to use a pop culture reference, if I may, Rudy. So think about the name Chapel Roan. What we know for sure is that Dave Chappelle had a secret daughter with Swazasaur Ronan, and they had a big argument about what to call the secret child, and so they settled on his last name as the first name and her last name for the first name. And also they named the kid after one of the countries in Lord of the Rings land where all the horses come from, which was his favorite part of the movies. But that was part of the argument because he'd never read the books, but she has, and she's like, well, did you at least watch the extended editions? And he said he had, which was logical to him at the time because them damn movies are so long. But he hadn't, which she later found out when he had them put Roanne on the birth certificate when she was still loopy from loss of blood during the labor and delivery. But that's what he remembered it sounding like, and she's like, I can't believe you didn't know that, and referenced the mouth of Sauron scene from the extended editions, and he didn't have any idea what she was talking about then either, which became a whole new fight they had to have in their secret hospital room. And from these facts, it's clear as day that these celebrities are weather controlling cannibals.
Clear as day. That's incredible. You know, I hope that the thing that you gather from this is that you don't have to be digging through the nooks and crannies of your stocking to find these incredible references of Santa from the Holy Word.
Well, let's head into the denouement, if you will, which is sort of fitting to have in French, because, boy, Song of Songs or Song of Solomon or Solomon's Song, that's probably the most French book in the Bible.
That's right. But, you know, I think I'm encouraged that this is a part of the Bible, although it might make people a little bit sweaty. Some people might be uncomfortable. There's no need to be uncomfortable because it's the basis for such incredible Christmas classics as Santa Baby and I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of scandal with that song. Like, where is Daddy in this whole liaison between Santa and Mommy? It's the great unanswered mystery of that song, which continues to trouble my mind to this day.
But you know, there's a Santa for all times, and I really enjoy the steamy Santa typology. And that's actually where we end our pageant. And honestly, we've been mulling it over about maybe just saving that one for the encore. It's kind of an epilogue, because there's always going to be an encore, and we really want to go out with a bang.
And we also want to be able to cut the encore depending on the prude levels of the audience, because when you really dig into that Song of Solomon and start seeing that twin fawns language, I mean, get your mind out of the gutter, Solomon. I think in our version, if we want, we can rescue that verse from the negative, overly sexualized associations by proposing that it be changed to, "Thy breasts are as two reindeer," maybe even two Rudolphs blinking their lights brightly into the night sky.
All I know is that, you know, once you finish reading that with these Christmas glasses on, you ain't never gonna eat a candy cane the same way.
Well, folks, you know, it's a hard thing to come into turnt or burnt about Christmas because it's turnt globally. So we got to say there's always a little caveat here, which is to say within the extended Christmas universe, there are a few hits and a few duds. And that's why we want to talk about Christmas movies. They're all fundamentally fairly turnt, given that they are on the side of Christmas, in the war on Christmas, because they're raising the profile just like you want some awareness marketing about Christmas. Does anybody not know about Christmas? Well, you got 1,000 Christmas movies that'll help you solve that problem. But we're going to go through a few classic Christmas titles here, work out, are these relatively speaking turnt or burnt, even though they are all absolutely turnt in the more spiritual kind of global sense. So first one we're going to go into here, The Muppet Christmas Carol. Rudy, is this turnt or burnt?
For me, it's sad to see such greedy little Muppets trying to fool us with their cuteness. I mean, I think some of them are pretty good looking, but you got that one animal guy, don't quite even know what animal he is, Gonzo, with that crank looking nose, and he finds himself like acting like he's a narrator of some Charles Dickinson novel. But I'll tell you something, I don't know how the Charles Dickinson estate didn't stop this movie, but it turns out these puppets had pretty much run out of creativity, and they did a shot-for-shot remake of the original Dickinson film. So for that reason, this thing's burnt.
Oh, I hear you about this copyright infringement. I mean, let's go with some originality here. Though I do like how they changed a couple of things. One being the rubber chicken factory Christmas party, which really emphasizes the glories of in-person work. There's no, you know, Christmas-themed 10-minute-long happy hour in your Santa socks and a hoodie with mulled wine you made on your own stovetop. This was a real bash, full of booze and unwelcome come-ons. So I like that, but there's two things I didn't like about it, which really make this one burnt for me. One is that we're looking at some movie here that proposes the unholy doctrine that one's actions of generosity towards the poor have any bearing on one's eternal destiny. I think you got to watch out for how these heresies slip in, you know, through a sort of Christmas vehicle. It's like a clown car. You know it's got clowns in it. You're hoping for as many clowns as possible, and then there's just frankly too many clowns that come out of there. Like, that's unreasonable at a certain point. I could have believed, and I should have believed, that there were 6 clowns in that car, but instead, I'm talking about 18 clowns, and those extra 12 clowns are real suspicious looking.
You know, I'm picking up what you're throwing down. I'm sensing a lot of salvation through works, and that meaning works towards a certain Tantium.
The other thing that's burnt about this movie is that Ghost of Christmas Future. I gotta just feel bad for this guy. This was the first of the movies where that same actor, ever since 1992, he's had to play the Ghost of Christmas Future, all the Dementors and Harry Potter's 1-6 and 7 parts 1 and 2, all the Ringwraiths and Lords of the Ring, and all the Witch King kind of characters in the Hobbit trilogy. This guy has been typecast as a hooded, faceless menace with bony hands, a sinus infection, and the ability to paralyze smaller characters with fear his entire life. And I feel bad. This guy, I mean, 92 is when this horrible, horrible part of this guy's life started, and he hasn't been able to escape since. Just awaiting the Dementor's kiss.
Wow, such a good point. I never thought about that, how you've been able to trace that back all the way back to 1992. That's a sad story right there.
All right, next up, turnt or burnt, It's a Wonderful Life.
Well, TJ, I gotta be honest. I never made it through it. I never made it through this movie. Not a lick of Christmas in it neither, unless you count that one scene with the kid sliding down the hill on that manure shovel. I know it's been popularized by a liberal agenda that wants you to promote films with no Christmas in them. No Santas, no reindeer, and then just call it a holiday movie. Well, for me, it's burnt. The only maybe glimpse of Christmas other than that one sliding down the hill scene is the Scrooge type named Potter. But unfortunately, that's also a part of that liberal CBD agenda.
I had a different take on Pottersville, because really that's the movie's one brief glimpse of a utopian society where everything's properly run, people are making their rent payments on time, nobody trusts strangers, and no one's given any handouts. So I actually kind of count that one towards the credit of the film.
I guess it's just safe to say that It's a Wonderful Life is a real trip, isn't it? Now that leads us to our next film, which is one that's become quite popular, not only when it was released, but maybe more and more popular year by year, and that's Home Alone.
Well, I love everything about this one. I mean, you've got nostalgia for that time when everybody had a brother like Buzz and a relative like Uncle Frank, people that did you the favor of toughing you up with their unrelenting cruelty and lack of parental oversight on those matters. But really, the kicker here, the core attribute of Home Alone, is that it's an ode to American individualism. When you are repelling foreign invaders with household goods and micro machines, not leeching off your local police who got better things to do than protect residents from robbery and kidnapping, that is when you are having an American Christmas straight out of the heavenly country.
For that reason, I think it's also turned. If all that fails, if the micro machines fail, then in the end you need help. All you do is you call on your much maligned neighbor to come over and crown some burglars on their dome with a snow shovel, and then leave your 8-year-old self in peace.
I love it. Just that vigilante justice where you're smoking people with your gardening tools. All right, next up on Turn to Burnt, Elf.
Well, you know I love Elf. I'm just going to say it straight away. This movie is turnt, but the first time I saw it, I thought it was burnt. I'll tell you why. I think it's a great film, and honestly, you know, you got yourself a nutcracker dancer prancing around New York, making his way all the way from North Pole to New York. It's kind of funny, but the title left me with some unmet expectations at first, because we never once encounter the hairy 1980s alien from Melmac.
And in spite of the eponymous character eating everything inside, including some spaghetti with syrup on it or some such truck, I did not once see that elf character try to eat the household pets like the original one did. And so, yeah, on that basis, I'd have to be a little disappointed too. But, you know, don't miss the pro-life message in Elf, though. This is from the good old days of adoption, where you just abandon the baby on the doorstep. That takes trust to a whole new level. And it is the antidote we need to the helicopter parenting we've seen since the 90s. You gotta push those kids out into the real world way earlier than you're ready to see them go.
That's right. Okay, we move on to our next film. Every good genre of media has to have a white something. We got the White Album, and now we're moving on to White Christmas. Brother TJ, White Christmas, Turnt or Burnt?
Oh, well, in spite of its great name, White Christmas is woke. I mean, you have got cross-dressing, you got tap dancing, you got the state of Vermont, you got the emotional depth of Eartha Kitt, and the cultural diversity of the four freshmen. And, you know, hot off the presses now, winning World War II was woke too. So this one has got like five or six things against it. I will say, though, let's just bring it back around and give credit where it's due. Saving the failing local inn with a big fundraiser by trying to fool veterans into parting with their savings by believing that your project is the only way to save true America that's basically what we do every Sunday. So we gotta give Why Christmas credit for its name and for its prophetic foretelling of our ministry. But in every other way, this one is burnt.
Oh, I'm right there with you. It's burnt. It kind of sends some gingerbread cookie crumbs your way when it starts with a war theme, but then ends up with a kumbaya with soldiers who are coming back to celebrate the singing and dancing and prancing of a couple of gentlemen. I just can't follow it for that reason. Clearly burnt. And so might as well be Black Christmas for all I say. Which brings us now to our next film, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Well, everybody's going to send in some hate mail to our Twitter on this one. But Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is burnt. Kind of do a little storyboarding with me here. How much time is spent on the reindeer? And how much time is spent on this guy called Hermie, which is short for Herman, which is short for Hermaphrodite? This guy who goes through all this, the sort of hero's journey to end up at the Island of Misfit Toys. I didn't pay $2.99 on Amazon Prime, in spite of already paying for regular Amazon Prime, to rent a film about Hermie, the would-be dental school applicant. I am here for the reindeer. And if I'm honest, I'm a little bit here for Abominable Snowman, because that inserts the whole world of cryptozoology into the Christmas story, which is exactly where it belongs. Nessie, Bigfoot, UFOs, Santa Claus, all spiritual visitors from another realm. But just because of the preeminence of this Hermie guy, I just can't get with this movie.
Well, TJ, you know how during the Christmas season, sometimes that cold weather starts to get into my bones and I start manifesting, and I gotta tell you something. I think that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is burnt just because I can't quite make it through one of these claymation movies, you know, when they're just using that animation with the Play-Doh. Kind of gets me to season, and I find myself just wondering why they didn't put one of them warnings in the front of the film that for those that are sensitive to seizures, that maybe you should choose another film. So I'm glad you explained all that to me, because once again, this is a movie that I haven't properly seen with my two eyes on account of some of the side effects.
Well, if you've been watching this one eyes closed, I just do want to call out one positive for you, which maybe some of the fans use as their main thing they like. Rudolph is actually kind of like a cyborg with augmented capabilities. He's got a nose that blinks, and that's particularly useful in the future where you better catch up with these enhancements or going to be left behind. So he's a positive example there. He's kind of a early adopter, if you will. All right, well, you heard it here first. Die Hard is a Christmas movie. And so then we got it in our little list here, Turnts or Burnts. Rudy, is Die Hard turned to burnt?
Well, TJ, we all love Die Hard, and we all understand that this is a Christmas movie. And in fact, if Hollywood hadn't gotten their woke agenda into this film back in the 1980s, we probably would have seen more spiritual themes running right through it. But there's a lot there if you pay attention. But a little known fact, the original title of the film was Unto Us a Child is Born, Only to Die Hard.
I heard the original title that they were workshopping for the sequel, because of course they made three or four of these. It was Die Hard 2, Die Easy, The Crucifixion Story. Well, and I would have loved to have seen that one. You know, it's too bad that they finish Hans Gruber or Snipe or whoever he is off in the first one, because man, he plays a role, if you're looking at like the Passion of the Christ connection, he plays a role in that sequel in the biblical sense. I think this is one of those you can get in that kind of like double DVD, double Blu-ray package with Die Hard 3, Rise Hard, The Resurrection Story, and then Die Hard 4 with a Vengeance, which is sort of like a fitting fourth movie tied in with the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, as the Lord returns in his glory to judge the quick and the dead.
There's so much that we can glean from this incredible franchise. It's truly a national treasure. I mean, from Nakatomi Plaza, which is once again an affirmation that Christmas is for all cultures, And we got Hans Gruber, incredible villain, as you mentioned. We got that that one guy that's doing cocaine and trying to cut a deal only to get killed. A clear sign of the opposition towards Christmas. Just the miracle of bringing life here on Earth, as we see the Bruce Willis's character strapping a big old fire hose to his waist and doing the greatest bungee jump that Hollywood's ever put on a silver screen.
For this and so many reasons, so turned. So speaking of Four Horsemen, really a dark horse inclusion in our list here of the Christmas movies is a very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas. And I just gotta say, when I was 32 and this movie came out, I wasn't allowed to watch it at the time. There was that promise on the cover of full frontal nudity and hard drug use was enough to get this one canceled during the opening credits by the other chaperones at the teenage lock-in when I was the assistant pastor at Whosoever Will, Full Gospel, Full Anointing Church of the Apostles of the Future, Kansas City Synod of the Church of Holy Anti-Demonic Domination Denomination.
You know, I recognize that the Harold and Kumar franchise can be a bit divisive, but when I realized that this could be in 3D, and I thought, what an opportunity to invite some of our native Indian friends to bring some of their good stuff. We'll throw on some of them 3D goggles, get ourselves a sack of burgers from White Castle, and just, you know, sing the praises of Hark the Harold and Kumar Angels Sing. And so I think it's a good redemption story, and for that reason I think it's turned.
Yeah, we're kind of past that prude moment right now. Maybe we'll get prudy again in a decade or two, but right now the evangelical movement's really past that, and we need to find our allies even in these unlikely places. You know, that when that 3D pot smoke was coming at us through our goggles and you could practically smell it, I just had to reframe that a little. It's like the holy incense of the prayers of the saints rising to heaven. And by the way, talk about a little hero's journey that all our young men sitting around smoking those pot cigars should be considering is the quest for the perfect Christmas tree. If you want to grow up fast, you just start trying to go out in your neighborhood and cut down the perfect Christmas tree. And you got to have some speed. You got to have some upper body strength. You got to be doing Warrior One, Warrior Two in your Pilates class, because you got to hold the tree above your head while you're running and your neighbors are chasing after you. And the saw is kind of like attached to your belt and it's clinking around and it's threatening to get between your knees. And you just got to keep on booking. So very unexpectedly, Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas is turned, though there is some burning you gotta watch out for if you're a sensitive viewer.
So this leads us to the last film we're gonna look at, and that is the Santa Claus Trilogy. So not one film, but three films, the Santa Claus Trilogy. So TJ, turned or burnt?
This is one where, you know, classic plot. It centers on how Tim Allen scares Santa such that he falls off the roof and dies, which should have landed him in court on the second-degree manslaughter charges, but instead he gets to try to be Santa Claus. I think what you're never going to hear from anyone else, but is undoubtedly the case, is that this Tim Allen situation is real. And there's two main interpretations I've come across. One is positive and one is negative. The positive one is kind of like that Elijah's cloak and spirit kind of passing on to Elisha that we referenced earlier. You could say, well, I gotta go to heaven in the chariot, in the sleigh, and I'm gonna just sort of appoint a successor. That's the positive reading, but I think, as the films kind of point out, maybe the negative reading is the one that's more likely, which is you gotta go all the way back to the first person who killed Santa Claus. And they sort of made some long-forgotten deal with the devil where they had to choose between an eternity of fiery damnation in a hellhole or an eternity of snowy redemption at the North Pole.
Man, that's so good. I love the way that you are able to trace all these important spiritual themes in these films and get us back to the real purpose. You know, honestly, and I know this could get me in trouble, but I just want to stop for a moment and just say something about Santa. And I'll get to my take on this trilogy, but I like to say that I like my Santas, like I like my marshmallows. I like them plump, white, and covered with soot from the fireplace. And I'm not here to skinny shame, but in order to be Santa, your shape needs to be a certain proportion. Like if you took a dune buggy from his jolly belly to his chin, it'd be the ride of your life. I just love that transformation from Tim the Tool Man Taylor to Santa Claus, because I feel like it really bolsters the type of Santas that we need in this country. You know, if you're Santa, you should be hopped up on Jardiance in that kind of stage of your life. And so I love the way that the transformation that we see in this trilogy. And so for that reason, and that reason especially, I give this movie a turnt.
Yeah, you can't be a skinny Santa Claus. I just can't stand seeing yet another movie where you got Timothy Chalamet in a fur coat. Looks like he's spreading tuberculosis instead of Christmas cheer. Get that guy some Chipotle gift cards. But as long as it's not some consumptive teenager playing the guy, I say, well, the Santa Claus trilogy is turnt. Well, folks, it's that time of year when you really need to get down to business with buying some gifts, and we want to provide you a service that helps that happen. We are recording this, I believe it's going to be hitting the airwaves just about noontime on Christmas Eve, so you have just a couple of hours to go out there and try to get a few gifts, especially for those kind of unmanly nephews of yours that are so hard to give gifts to, and those 10-year-olds who aren't even men yet, just playing video games for fun still instead of grinding for victory. You know, at this point on Christmas Eve, you should just give them a great nickname, Old Blood and Guts, or Judas the Scaredy Cat, or Wrong Way Slurps. But really, you should really deliver a physical object in these kids' stockings. So we're going to drop a couple of Cross Vegas approved gift ideas on you now. Rudy, what do you got first?
You know, and I realize that all y'all probably went out to the Trump Holiday online store and hoping to get that Amira Christmas sweater that we all love, only to find it was sold out. Well, we got some ideas for you, you know. So first one is, you know, you want to help that well-meaning second cousin who forgot what it meant to be a man. Well, guess what? In this age of books being brought to the silver screen, we got one that went a little under the radar. So we invite you to relive the book Wild at Heart that brought Christian masculinity back to life, from the Dockers khakis to the tactical assault cargo pants khakis. This book is now a film starring Nicolas Cage and Laura Dern. You can find it on Amazon in the used section for under $4 plus shipping. That's once again Wild at Heart DVD.
I love that one. Well, one that's going to be uncontroversial in every sense. I would love for you all to give your nephews or your distant relations, for whom you haven't bought anything yet, that experience of the line going up ecstasy of a skyrocketing investment juiced with the expectation of direct presidential influence, government contracts, and tax incentives. So that, of course, is getting one of these kids a Tesla stock.
Not to be construed as financial advice.
It's $462 today as I look at Yahoo Finance, and that could be upwards of $700 a share by tax day. And if $462 is a lot for you, probably a little more than the single uncles can afford. You know, you just kind of write them out one of those coupons for free hugs at a yet-to-be-named future date, but just include the name of the stock that you bought for yourself as the promised article of value that you'll divide up with them once it goes to the moon.
I love that idea. I mean, that's one that you could enact right now. That's the beauty of that one. You don't need to wait for some shipping or it's been delayed. You could do that one right now. That's a really good one, TJ. Well, you know, another idea for that nephew of yours is something I saw recently, and it's awesome. They're making these tin containers. They're like a gigantic coffee can, and they're covered with classic Christmas scenes of a sleigh going over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house. And I mean, you could fit a ton of stuff into these decorated tins, probably at least 50 DVDs or some Legos or countless nuts and bolts. But get this, not only is this thing decorated storage container that's made of metal, it's full of popcorn. We're talking probably 10 extra large buckets of cinema popcorn could fit in this thing. And if we you know, value that at theater prices, the corn in this can is probably worth $800. But what's more is it's divided into three sections. Get this, one section, buttered popcorn. Another one, yep, that's right, caramel corn. And then the kicker, the final segment is cheese popcorn. I haven't seen a threesome that delicious since the Neapolitan party pail I housed the other day. This gift is sure to please. So mark that one on your list. Popcorn tin.
Well, for folks who've been following us for a while, don't turn down your volume just because you heard this before. But I want to just put another plug in there for our prayer bots as a gift. Because as we saw from Psalm 69, you could be praying someone onto the naughty list. But if you're like us, as so many of you are, and lacking the time and discipline for regular spiritual practices of your own, we at Cross Vegas have a techno-spiritual solution for you, which is prepaid prayer bots that'll be scraping the news stories about your intended target and sending up a prayer for failure whenever they are mentioned. Add a prayer of praise to the giver of every good gift when their relationships fail or they flunk out of rehab again. These are all the types of prayers that are most amenable to the assistance of our prayer bots. And wouldn't you love it? It's just like a subscription to Highlights magazine when you're a kid or National Geo Junior. The gift receiver in this case knows that they are just going to keep on experiencing this all year and just seeing, you know, the person they're praying onto the naughty list kind of get some pre-punishments all the way along before they eventually get that final punishment.
Wow, that is just a gift that does keep on giving. I love that. Thank you for mentioning that, DJ. You know, sometimes I feel like the wokeism is bleeding into my extended family. Let's say you got yourself an uncle. He ain't as manly as you once thought he was. Perhaps he needs an injection. Maybe an injection of tobacco, bourbon, cedar, and fire. Well, guess what? You can put all them things together and gift your uncle a custom candle. That's right. You can find these things on that cool craftsmanship website, Etsy, and your uncle can light up one of them babies and drift off to sleep in his extra deep soak tub.
That is one of the untapped weapons in the salvation of masculinity in our country. Aromatherapy, the soak tub. You can be breathing in your alcohol instead of drinking it in, and that'll keep the calories down, and you're gonna, you know, get that revenge bod you've been dreaming about ever since the divorce. Got one more item here on the gift list, and this is a little bit more for that unmanly nephew for whom you've given up hope. Sometimes an appropriate gift is going to actually be giving somebody a lump of coal, especially if they've been to some of these climate rallies and stuff and committed the sin of renewable energy. Now, people are saying that coal's a dirty way to produce energy, but look to that earlier example of Isaiah, and there the coal is purifying even when it's burning. And man, Isaiah got some real good energy out of that, enough to write 66 chapters of the Bible. And can renewables release that kind of spiritual energy? I think not. So coal is, in spite of the condemnatory nature of it in the usual Santa stories, I think there's a redemptive angle if you can kind of explain it right. You know, once your nephew is crying about getting coal in the stocking, and you just kind of talk over that a little bit and tell him the good parts.
TJ, I love the way that you're bringing back tough love into the Christmas season. I also think this is so strong in that we need to be teaching our young man that this country is built on fossil fuels. And what a reminder. So it's practical, but it also sends a deep message.
Rudy, I hope our listeners appreciate just the depth that we've gone in researching and bringing into light just all of these wonderful truths about the King of Jingling and Mrs. Claus, the true bride of Christ. That's what we need, just in time help to live our spiritual lives. And dear listeners, we hope this Christmas Eve edition of Cross Vegas has done just that blessing for you.
That's right. I want to extend a very merry Cross Vegas Christmas to all y'all out there. We're coming to you live from Las Vegas, the birthplace of Kris Kringle, and we'll see you again in the new year.